Guys, we have a very special episode today. We have Luca Falloni on the show. He told us all about his fashion brand, how he built it over the last 12 years. He started in consulting, lived in London, moved to San Francisco, and then went back to Italy, talked to all these amazing people there, and learned all about the different regions, the different materials, and all about fashion. This is really a great story, so I really advise you to listen through the whole episode. This one's going to be in English since Luca doesn't speak German. I hope that's fine. Please leave me a review, subscribe to the show, and if you like these English episodes, let me know. Maybe we can do a little bit more of them. So now let's go with Luca Falloni. Jede Woche spreche ich im Behind the Sea Podcast mit Top-Level-Managern und Managerinnen. Alle haben ein Problem. Sie kommen nicht an die richtigen Leute zur richtigen Zeit für ihre Herausforderungen im Geschäft. Egal ob für permanente Rollen oder interimistische Aufgaben, wie zum Beispiel M&A-Projekte, Systemeinführungen, Neuaufbau und Umbau von Abteilungen oder ganze Organisationstransformationen. Oftmals mangelt es an der richtigen Ressource oder eben Kompetenz. Wenn dich das aktuell auch herumtreibt, dann komm gerne auf mich zu. Wir können einmal unverbindlich zu dem Thema sprechen. Mehr Informationen findest du auch auf atreus.de. Ich freue mich auf deine Nachricht auf LinkedIn oder eben via Mail. Und jetzt zurück zum Podcast.
Luca, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So how's being in fashion these days?
It's a rocky world. The last 5 years particularly since I started the business 10 years ago. The first 5 years were relatively smooth. Obviously, it's difficult to get a business off the ground, so you have the normal challenges. And they were fun days. Then COVID came, and the last 5 years, 5 or 6 years, have been fairly challenging. Every year is a bit different. First was COVID, lockdowns. Then was difficult to produce the goods for a couple of years. There was inflation. Then there was wars, consumer confidence was affected, tariffs in America. So it's always there is always something new. And I guess entrepreneurs that grew a business in these few years, they learned how to be resilient and always be ready for the next challenge.
Okay, we will go into that a little bit more in detail later in the show. But give us a quick introduction. Who are you and what are you currently building?
Yeah, so... I'm building basically the first direct-to-consumer brand from Italy in the menswear, in the elevated casual space. We are focused on fine materials, so all nice things like cashmere, linen, brush cotton, silk cashmere, all the nice blends, and everything is made in Italy. We build what we call a permanent collection of very well-made luxury pieces, but differently from the other fashion labels, we don't change the collection every season because we don't sell to buyers, I mean, to the wholesale channel. We sell to the final user. And so we don't need to give them, we need to give them what they want, not what the buyers want. Yeah, so this is what we're building.
Okay, it's super nice. I mean, I drive by your store in Munich almost every day because I bike there and I live in the area. And it's really nice. I really like the fashion. So when you say luxury, what does it mean? What is luxury at the end?
Yeah, for me, luxury is the intrinsic quality of the pieces we produce, right? Mm-hmm. The quality of the material, the quality of manufacturing, the detail. For other brands and for the industry overall, maybe it might be more about high prices, exclusivity or perceived exclusivity, scarcity or perceived scarcity. We work in a different way. We want to do the best product possible and make them available to the highest possible people globally. So in a way, I have a different view of luxury, more... let's call it democratic, but more real, more focused on the product rather than the psychology of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. And so I tell you my personal goal when it comes to fashion, and then you can say if I can achieve it with Luca Falloni, okay?
Yeah.
So I think of fashion. I'm not the most fashionable guy, I'd say, but I like a good style, I like a good fit, and I really like good material. So I always want to be the guy who can go to a pool party and be like, okay, he's dressed well, but maybe a little bit overdressed. And I can also be in a business meeting and the people be like, okay, he's dressed well, it looks chic, but maybe he could have worn like a suit or something. So my style should always fit in every occasion. And I'm rather overdressed than underdressed, but I'm also fine with being underdressed a little bit on chic events. Can I yeah. do that?
I really like how you describe yourself, because also like this is how a lot of our customers look at the world. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be the fashion, the most fashionable guy in the room. They want to, first of all, dressing is about being comfortable with yourself, being confident, have nice materials that are also good for that time of the year. So all our materials, what I call fine materials, are great for the season. Cashmere keeps your body temperature. Linen keeps you fresh in the summer, etc. And so, look, men shop, usually when you look at the market, men and women shop in different ways. Women want something different every time they go out. They like novelty when they go shopping. Men like to solve a need, And what you said is exactly our market. We like to be in what I call the elevated casual space. So something mm-hmm. between casual and formal. And by the way, after COVID and also before, there was already a trend where the wardrobe was becoming less formal, especially for work. Mm-hmm. The kind of concept of business casual was more accepted in more industries and is going more and more that way. And also the lifestyle of people has changed over the years. It's more dynamic. People travel more. People might work a little bit in the office, a little bit at home, a little bit they travel. And so obviously you cannot change every time your setting change. So the clothes and the wardrobe that we try to build, it's dynamic. And what I like about, in general, products is like you can dress them up or down based on the needs. Let's say a denim shirt, if you wear it over a pair of chinos, etc., it can be more casual. But if you wear it under a suit, you are basically creating a more modern look than wearing a formal shirt under a suit. And so again, as you point, you can wear it in the business meeting, being the cool guy rather than the standard risk-averse person.
Okay, understood. Makes sense. Very cool. Can you give us a little bit of some facts, like where are you located? Where's headquarter? Where do you have stores? If you have like lots of stores, just say something about that.
So all the production is in Italy. So we have mm-hmm. an office that runs basically all the products in Bergamo and the relationship with suppliers. All our factories that make the product tend to be in North Italy, but we went around every region of Italy to see what they're good at. In Italy, each region is specialized in different products. For instance, Tuscany is better for the leather goods. The Lombardia area is better for shirts. Veneto area is very good for jackets, outerwear. So we have factories all over the countries, that laboratories that make the product. And the materials as well, we bought them from the regions of Italy that are good for those materials. For instance, we buy textile from Piemonte, cashmere from Le Marche, etc. We also have an office in London that works more about the soft skill of the brand, so finance, marketing, this sort of area, not related to the product. So everything related to the product is followed from Italy. The non-product areas follow from London. And then we have a retail presence, which at the moment is 12 stores. Mm-hmm. We have mostly they're in Europe. 8 are in Europe and 4 are in North America. The Europe one cover basically all the major capitals. So Milan, Paris. We started from the fashion capital. So Milan, Paris, London, New York. Mm-hmm. And then we expanded in other major capital or city that we believed are important to build great distribution and a great brand. So we have Munich, Zurich, Miami, Toronto. And in some of those cities, we double down. Like, obviously, the big cities like New York and London are very important for us in terms of revenue. So we want to serve the customers with more locations. And the good thing as well that is interesting is the relationship between online and retail. We started the brand online, selling globally. We never restricted the shipping areas from day one, actually. And so we could see really clearly, okay, people in this city like our product. People in that region like our product. And so we followed with the stores in places where we knew we had customers. And what you see at the beginning when you open a store in a location where you already have online customer, some of those online customers start to shop in the store. So the store in the short term cannibalizes the online channel, let's say, and then they grow together because the brand awareness in that region goes up a lot.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, congrats, man. I mean, 10 years building a fashion brand doesn't sound easy to me. I think that's something that you can't just, you know, start from your room, or maybe you can give us a little bit of context. How did you start? What was the first, or when did the first time that the idea raises in your head? When was that? And then from there.
Yeah, I don't come, to be honest, from the fashion industry. Some people study fashion and they want to be the next designer and they want to design something different. I was a customer. I was a customer of other brands. I always, you know, bought the product like every other man on the planet. And I grew up in Italy. I studied in Italy. Then I after university, I was doing my master in London. I remained to work in London in consulting, strategy consulting at Bain. And in that period that I was living and working abroad, I noticed that I was never buying clothes abroad. I would only buy my clothes during my trip back to Turin, my hometown, when I was visiting my family. And the reason was fairly simple and logic. In Turin, I knew where to go. I knew the quality of the product. I grew up knowing, you know, which small shop or artisan does the nice shoes and the nice trousers, and everything is the style I wanted, and it was fairly priced. When I was living abroad, first in London, and then I moved to San Francisco, still with consulting, I couldn't find the same ease of finding the design and the product quality price I wanted. And I never thought about it as a business for a long time, for 8 years, 8 or 9 years. Then one day in around 2012, 2013, I was in San Francisco, and those were the years where the first direct-to-consumer brand started. I was always entrepreneurial in my mind. I always wanted to know to start a business, and I was always keeping my eyes open for something innovative and interesting. And so the first direct-to-consumer brand was starting, basically before that year, brands were mainly what I called wholesale brands. A wholesale brand, let's say, produces with their own design, they find a manufacturer, they produce a product, and then they sell that product to a third-party retailer, let's say to a department store or a multi-brand store or an online retailer, okay? And this third party then sells to the customer. But obviously, there is an extra step which increases the product price by 2.5 times, roughly. And I never knew about this model. And when I was in San Francisco, I learned about it because they were the first direct-to-consumer brands that were disrupting this old business model. And they were basically saying, you know what? We're not going to sell to a retailer. We're going to sell directly to the customer using the online channel. And that was a very innovative model because you could essentially charge almost one third of a comparable product that is sold mm-hmm. through a retailer. Not only that, but you have the direct relationship with the customer. So you get their email, you know what they're buying, you can recommend products that they might like, you can ask them, hey, how did the product do? And you can get feedback on improving the product. So also, the improvement cycle is very fast when you have the direct relationship. And that's what we use as well to improve our product over time. And so to make a very long story short, because it is a long story, it's now over 10 years of my life. I understood that this direct-to-consumer model could be used to basically make those products that I knew from Italy available to the world at a very fair price. And so, you know, essentially we would take the best quality products available in Italy, like the other very famous brands offer. And we make it available to the internet at a fair price globally. And we started with a subset of our collection today. And over time, we, you know, every time we improved enough a category, we added in another category. And so we grew to where we are today.
Okay. Understood. But still, can you go back to the first piece? How yes. did that happen? Did you travel back to Italy and then like went to the fabrics, or what? How did you come to the first piece and to the first set?
It's actually a funny story. I obviously, when I wanted to start in the industry, I don't come from fashion, so not coming from fashion, I didn't have a network of people that create these products. So, but I remember starting from, I started in Bocconi, Milano, where there are many, many sons of some of the families that do business in the area in northern Italy. And, you know, they come from all different backgrounds. And one of these people had a family business that produced belts. And I remember the business was quite successful. And I saw ask him some question, like I wanted to learn how producing belt works and how the industry works. And we talked for a long time. And then I said, like, great, why don't you start making belts for me? Obviously, I always wanted to create the total look with all the categories over time. But you have to start somewhere. So I thought maybe accessories on the internet, it's easier at the beginning because sizing is less complicated than a shirt and et cetera. So I thought, okay, let's see if belts could be an area. So, and we talked a long time and said, okay, let's produce belts. And he was like, no, but wait a second, I produce women's belts. And I'm like, well, clearly that must be the same, right? I mean, men's belt, women's belt. And he was like, no, it's a completely different industry and product. We don't make men's belts. And he was like, but I know that the person in Italy that makes the best men's belt. And so he introduced me to this other fantastic person who now is retired from Bergamo, and he spent his whole life making belts for men. And so we, and also then he introduced me to the people that make the best leather from Tuscany. And so I went to Tuscany to explore this town called Santa Croce, where people make full grain leather. They've been doing leather, literally this town made leather for hundreds of years. And so after that, they introduced me to someone in the area that makes wallets and someone that makes bags. And in that journey, literally, you start driving to a small town that I never heard of. And everyone knows everyone. And, you know, you start hearing the stories. And then we started actually selling. The first product was a travel bag. But obviously, selling a bag online is quite expensive compared to a shirt or a pair of trousers, so it wasn't selling that much. And also when I launched belts, it wasn't selling that much. But along our journey, we bumped across someone in Lombardia that made shirts his whole life, and I was like, but selling shirts online would be difficult, sizing would be complicated, slim, regular, many sizes. But then his products, I mean, we developed something that was so beautiful, and I'm like, okay, let's try. And we launched this shirt, which is still today one of our best-selling product. We made this shirt with a one-piece collar that we became really iconic of our brand. And then over the years, Prince William started wearing this shirt. And that was like our first major piece of PR. That it really took us off. And in parallel, still, once I started gravitating around the area of Bergamo and Brescia, which is like just outside of Milan, a lot of laboratories are in that area. That area is really, really entrepreneurial. And so we started making knitwear with one of the guys in the area who has been making knitwear for a couple of generations. And, you know, little by little, you start understanding the details of every product, every category, and then gradually you expand the collection. After that was quite natural developing the collection because, for instance, we became really good at linen shirts. And in the process, we understood linen as a material. So the next question was, okay, what do we do with linen? Okay. And so we developed linen trousers. And look, at that point, we didn't know anything about trousers, but we knew about linen. So it was a good start. And we learned about trousers a little bit. So then as standing in trousers was more natural. Again, linen led us into linen suits. Linen, everyone was buying this shirt, and they were asking, do you have a blazer to sell with it? I was like, no, we don't. But since everyone asked, we started thinking, okay, maybe we should sell a blazer. And one thing led to another. And again, having developed leather, learning about leather from day one, and we knew a lot of leather people in Italy. Then we bumped across some people in Veneto that create amazing outerwear. And it was expensive. It is expensive to make this outerwear. Even if you sell it through a direct-to-consumer channel, the customer still pays a high price. But we thought, look, this is so beautiful, we have to try it. And then people bought it. So that's how it went. But I remember the early days, I was renting the cheapest car I could rent every time I go to Tuscany or wherever, and I was travel from early AM to the evening, meeting, you know, in random town I've never been, meeting interesting people. Those still were other days.
Super interesting. Did you do that while still working in consulting? No, probably job, right?
No. Look, yeah. I was in San Francisco at the time in consulting. As soon as I thought, okay, this direct-to-consumer model can be applied to high-end Italian luxury product, let's say, I went back to Europe and I quit my job. And it took me a year where there was a year from idea to launch. Because I'm a perfectionist, and I remember the first 3 months, I made a list of like 100 brands or something that I respect, and then branded, made it in the apparel fashion industry, and I started studying each of them, why they made it, how they made it, what makes them different from other brands I don't respect, or other brands that didn't make it over the years, and I was really rational about. Creating a plan that could work or could increase the chances of success. And then after that, I'm like, okay, now we have kind of a plan. How do we create the product? And I remember the first prototype of the bag, it took us months to get it right. The artisans of that laboratory still remember me because I was the guy that didn't produce many volumes at all, but it was annoying them the most. And it has started like that with every producer. And even the producers now produce a lot of units for us. They still are scared. They are scared to meet me because every time they meet me, I come up with new ideas to change the product again for the millionth time. And while they would like to keep things stable, and but we always try to learn from the customer. And you know, over the years, you always hear something new that you want to implement.
That's when I love that story. You know why? Because today or these days, lots of companies and startups, they build a deck and they have an idea and maybe they have a prototype, but they're not necessarily making any revenue yet. And then they collect like so much money currently, so much money is in AI and stuff. And they have these business cases and everything. And they have a great founders team, probably the same greatness that you brought to the table at the beginning. But still, there's no real product, no real customer. So you did it probably, this sounds like you did it the other way, right?
Yeah, so I made a point of, I don't want to raise money until I have a live website with at least a couple of products. And I used my few savings I had, and I maxed out a couple of credit cards. So we launched the first product, and then I raised money, a little bit of money from two or three friends at the time. In 2015, and I said, I'm not going to raise bigger amount of money until I have some revenue to show to invest. I've always been, you know, in Silicon Valley, they do big rounds of revenue, big rounds of financing with relatively big dilution for investors, for current investors. And I've always done it differently. Every couple of years, I raise a tiny bit of money, just enough to be safe for another couple of years. I've always looked at dilution as, you know, in Silicon Valley, people celebrate when they raise money. To me, is actually the opposite. When you raise money, yes, in a way, people are happy to invest and is a validation for your concept, but it's not really much to celebrate. It still means you still need other people money to make your business viable. So, and you're basically selling a part of your kid. You know, I still retain majority control of the business, which I've been very capital efficient in developing the business. We launched retail only at the later stage, where because obviously retail is a great way to increase brand awareness and to add additional revenue, but it requires a lot of upfront investment in a store. And so I only launched retail after 5 or 6 years. And I've always done it in a way which is very gradual. Every year I open a couple of stores, and then last year was 3 stores. Now we're trying to do 4 stores per year. But I would never do something raising a lot of money to open 30 stores in a year. I know if you keep consistently over time, and also because I have a long-term mindset, I don't want to sell the company in 2 or 3 years. I probably don't want to sell the company full stop in my lifetime. And so if you have that long term, I know that in the long term, we could have 200 stores, maybe 250, 300. But, you know, you can try to get there in 10 years, diluting yourself a lot and probably getting a heart attack on the way. Or you open 3, 4 per year and then 5 or 6, and then it might take you 25 years to get there, 30 Makes years. Sense. But that's okay. Like, also, like, a brand needs to, you cannot just push with force the creation of a brand. A brand needs to grow organically. You need to wait that Prince William buys randomly your product. And you need to wait that a friend of that person that never heard of the brand tells him that, oh, I've been wearing this brand for a while. It's quite nice. Have a go. And maybe they find it in Brinnerstrasse, where you see the store. But they never thought they would go in. You know, you need to push many channels gradually, consistently, over time. Also, another reason why I don't recommend to any founder of a product-based business to really push for growth or very high growth in the early years is because the product, I believe, is the key output of the business before the brand, before the service. Obviously, service is very important and brand is very important, but you cannot create a great brand if the product is not great. You're lying to your customers if you're trying to do so. And eventually, the lie will catch up. But so first, you need to improve the product, but it takes time. You know, you launch a product, you get feedback, next production batch, you improve it a bit. You might spot things that break after 2 or 3 years. So you don't want to have a lot of inventory with bad products and or let's say not perfect product. So to me, a lot of my work now, yesterday was in Bergamo the whole day reviewing products that we have reviewed a million times already. And we always find something new. And you know, now we're going more niche about what we try to improve. After how many washes does the button break or something like that? Mm-hmm. After, you know, like we try to test things to the extremes. And it's quite fun. It becomes more niche. But in the same way, like when you raise a kid, first you need to teach him how to walk and then what career to start. You know,
sure.
Different yeah. things at different time.
Makes sense. So, like you said, you're spending a lot of time with the product. I think in the 10-year video, you said you spent 2 days a week doing product. Yeah. What does that mean? Can you tell me how a day looks like in your life and maybe one of those days also?
I'll tell you how a week looks like because I've structured my week in a way that allows me to push each department consistently a little bit every week. If you start, so there are 2 ways to work on things. Either you go by priority, okay? Okay, product is the most important thing, so you only do product. Or you try to go by department and at least do some priorities by department, even for the departments that are seemingly non-important, okay? So my week is as follows. And by the way, the week goes into the weekend, but so Monday, I always start with strategy. So I have a 2-hour meeting with my the most important person in my business after me. There are like a handful of very important people, and this person follows strategy and growth. So, and we discuss how the previous week went and if there is any learning for the immediate future. Although obviously we have longer term strategy, but like we try to learn from any small things that happened the week before. Then I work on finance. Obviously finance, it's an area where you have to be sharp. And so your brain is fresh on a Monday. So You can focus on that. And then I work on retail. Okay, retail involves thinking how to improve each store, you know, the retail experience. Tuesday is always about brand and website. I try, after a hard Monday, let's say, I try to have a creative Tuesday to rest my brain a little bit. So these two areas are quite creative and are very important. Wednesday is always production, usually, which is different from product design. It's related, but different. So I want to learn, I want to make sure in our business effectively, a fashion business, the reason why many people that come from fashion don't succeed is because they don't understand that the design part is as important as keeping the cash flow in order, having the product in the shelf at the right time, not too much, not too little, which is sounds easy, but it's not easy, especially when you work with Italian laboratories. things are not like in Germany. So sometimes you have to, make sure, things happen. And so Wednesday's production and some product design. Thursday is also, again, product design and some HR and logistic. And Friday is basically everything else I haven't had time to finish in the week, all the loose ends whatever other things come to my mind. Saturday I rest, Sunday I prepare the week. In the second half of the, I try to never be home later than 4 p.m. So I basically do my first day of the week I try to put 8 hours on a Sunday afternoon, evening, night. So I like to start the week already kind of knowing what are the priorities and being prepared.
Got it. And how about like everything that comes up, like, you know, during the week that's trying to interrupt the schedule? How do you take care of these things?
Yeah, so that's the usual. You have a to-do list of a certain amount of tasks, plus during the week, 3 times the amount of tasks show up somehow. Mm-hmm. And you end up the week having done only half the things you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Luckily, there is the next week. So,
sure.
Like if I could do in, you know, I have a very long list of things we are working on and through, and I wish. I mean, if I look where we are now compared to 5 years ago, I'm like, wow, we made a lot of progress. If I look at, you know, every smaller period of time, I always wish we've done more, right? But you can't accelerate things. And look, the brand could be bigger by now, probably, if I was a bit more aggressive or if I'd raise more capital. I'm happy where we are. And we're doing things like, you know, slowly with passion. You know, I like to go Saturdays. I did say to you, I don't work, but that's not true. Actually, wherever cities I am, I go to the store and I try to speak to 3 or 4 customers or, you know, I always, it's interesting going to a stores or to your own website as a founder is always, at the same important to do it, but also stressful. Because I go into the store with the eyes of finding the what doesn't work. I don't. Yeah. Now over the years, I'm more and more like, oh, actually, this store is nice. I'm more and more happier about what I see. But I always focus on making a list of things that can improve, and I give to the manager and I tell my team. And I always come up with new ideas that we can apply to all the stores globally the next day. And it's quite stressful. You know, like, I don't know if you watched the movie The Founder about the McDonald's story.
Yes.
When at the beginning, the guy goes to visit one of the first franchisee and he starts picking the trash and all those things. It's pretty much like that. It's pretty much like that. That I see a lot of commonalities on that movies.
Very cool. So one of my last questions. So I think in the other video, you also said, when you think too much about some things, you don't do them.
Yeah.
Well, can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Look, I mean, I have people that are like, oh, but this wouldn't work. Often, you know, I'll give you a few examples. First, when you start a business, I don't think people that start a business are smarter than people that don't. or there are a lot of stories of people that come with no education background and start a great business, or, you know, people that drive the truck at Walmart and become CEO 25 years later. My point is, I don't think being a founder requires insane level of intellectual capacity, but it does require the very first difference is some people start, some people don't start. Okay, that's the very first difference. And the people that don't start usually are very worried about what could happen if you start. Oh, I need to give up my job. I need to, this might not work. People might think I'm crazy or, and that did happen to me the first few years, by the way. All my friends thought I was crazy, right? But the first thing is like, if you overanalyze something, you always find something that doesn't work. So when I started this business, I analyzed other brands, but I didn't do a very detailed business plans, but I analyzed other brands and then I analyzed how to make a product, but I didn't study how to get to market or how to build the logistic or how to, otherwise it would have been very complicated to figure out all in one go. So first thing is to start, you shouldn't ask too many questions. If you have a passion, like if you have an idea, just go for it. What can possibly happen if it doesn't work? At the very least, it's a fun project and you learn something. And then, look, a million times over our journey, you know, the first time we opened the store, right? I never wanted to do retail, right? I wanted to do only online direct to consumer. And not retail direct to consumer, because retail required a lot of capital. And I thought online alone was enough. But then one of our customers was a retail agent. And his job was to find stores for brands. And he told me, he made an excuse to meet me. He wanted to give me feedback about the product. And then I said, yes, let's meet. And then pretty soon was obvious that he wanted to convince me to open stores. and I said, look, let's. And he said, look, there is this pop up opportunity. Do you want to try? And I said, look, why not? It was a 3 month pop up in a major street in London, and we tried a pop up. And to my surprise, people that never heard about the brand were coming in and buying. Okay, mm-hmm. So very interesting. And two people that heard about the brand or bought online, they were coming in and they were happy to see something physical. So we thought, okay, this channel is also interesting. And we expanded it. And then I remember another time was like, instead of opening, consolidating, you know, more stores in Europe, the second store I opened in New York, which for us was something crazy. First, you know, we were a small, very small company. And as a brand, it makes sense, or as a company makes scale, some people think it makes sense to first scale nationally rather than internationally. Because obviously when you go internationally, you double your structures, you know, there are more complexity, you don't know the geography. But I went to New York several times, and it was very expensive, very complicated to do business there if you come from Europe. But eventually we found the stores, and it was the start of our US journey. And US is 40% of our volumes now, online and offline. But if we didn't understood the American customers with that opportunity, it would have taken longer.
Sure.
All the times that we are like, okay, we started being successful, let's say, with smaller priced items like shirts and knitwear. And I thought, look, it's crazy to launch jackets that cost much more than those products. They will not sell online. Our customers will perceive us different in the store. But we started creating this beautiful outerwear and it sold, and suddenly it completely changes the store's economics, because you don't need to sell that many jackets a week to add some revenue to the store, to that specific stores. And also it completes the look. It's more beautiful to create an outfit on a mannequin. There is something else to show. And so that's another example. Or you know, often like we test new things, new software, then I'm not, or new initiatives like that we've never done before, new channels that we've never done before in marketing, things like that. And what I've learned over the years is that as a founder or as a business CEO or something, you always need to kind of have a foot on the accelerator and a foot on the brake, like a pilot of Formula One. You need to accelerate when it's time to accelerate, but be ready to brake. And every time there is an idea, try it. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. Try it smaller. I give an example. Now we launch shoes, right? We don't know much about shoes, in complete honesty. I mean, I know about shoes as a customer, though. And don't forget, the experience that people develop as a customer is very, very valuable. I never run a restaurant, but I can tell you what are the things that are important to me as someone that eats in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And if one day I want to open a restaurant, which is something I would like to do, I'll have a couple of inputs. But my point is, shoes, we have launched them in a few stores at the moment. They're not online. They're only available in small selections in a few stores. And we are testing them. And it's going well. And we will improve a couple of things. And then we will launch them online. But my point is, there is also a way to, rather than doing a lot of analysis up front, just launch the best output you can do in a shorter time and then improve it along the way.
Makes sense. Very good advice. I like how you always have a story when you say something or when you share a learning or advice. Last question. So when I'm heading to the store, I'm probably heading to your store in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I think, because I need some new stuff and I love cashmere and all sorts.
Thank
of
you.
You heard it. What should I be exploring? Anything I should look at? Anything new? Anything you would me particularly point at?
We recently started adding a lot of to the categories of outerwear and layers, which I like them a lot because A, it allows to build an outfit, but also like some people, going back to your point about dressing up or down for the meetings, etc., layers allow you to be more creative. I've loved over time to work with leather because and outerwear, it completes kind of the cycle of all the learnings we've done over 10 years. We know about shirts, we know about leather, now we just launch a suede over shirt, and it's a fantastic piece. It's a fantastic piece. So that would be one. The Razor jacket, again, it's probably one of the best leather jacket in the market. I like to sell it. I like to tell a story, which is always like, I mean, if people ask me, describe me the Razor jacket, I always say in a very simple way, this is the leather jackets Tom Cruise would wear if he was driving a motorcycle.
All right.
So that's my simple explanation. But I love, look, generally I love all the, we don't put something on the shelf if we don't love it, if we don't believe there is a need, if we're not improved over the years. Yes, our business is very similar in a way to Costco. We don't try, even if Costco is a grocery chain and they sell a bit of everything, but they have very few option for each category, if not one option. And that gives you the possibility to have scale in that option and to rotate the inventory faster than another distributor. And for us, that we produce our own product, it gives us the opportunity to make it as good as we believe it should be. And if you only sell one straight of a shirt, you might as well make it the best design you think it should be and the best quality and everything. So, everything. I recommend having a look, exploring everything.
Okay, I do. Well, you know, this has been fun. Thank you so much for doing it. I think there was a lot of advice, a lot of cool stories in the whole conversation. So thank you so much for doing this. I'm looking forward to speaking to you again or seeing you in one of your stores.
I'll actually be in Munich in a few weeks. As one of the many new tests of things we've done, we started sponsoring sporting events. And the Munich Tennis Open was the first sport events we ever sponsored 3 years ago. And we did it since every year. And for me, this business is also a nice opportunity to travel to nice places. And, I go now every year to Munich for the tennis tournament. And it's a good opportunity to see the store as well.
Amazing.
So I'll meet you
I'll
there.
Text you. I'll text you. I'm at the Open as well. I have tickets for the tennis meeting as well. Okay, very nice. I love it. Luca, thank you so much.
Perfect. Thank you for having me and have a great day.
Yes, everything from here. If you guys want to explore Luca Falloni, you can check the show notes. There will be links. There will be links to our website and to what I do. Connect with us. It's always worth trying to get in contact, and looking forward to the next episode.